Welcome into the latest Daily Wager Extra podcast. We are taping this on 12-12, December 12th, the night of, after a week 14 now with one remaining game. And so far, it's been basically a bloodbath for the house as the public fared quite well. Favorites ran an impressive run. We'll get into all that with ESPN researcher Mackenzie Kramer coming up in a little bit. And had some wild endings as well, and obviously some bad beats for some of you out there. So without further ado, let's get into it and bring in Mackenzie. And Mackenzie, I hope you are licking your chops and fat wallet after the public did quite well this Sunday.
Well, I had to do some recovery after betting Amanda Nunes yesterday. So, but I'm typically an underdog better, so this was also not a good week for me in the NFL. But like you mentioned, favorites, unbelievable week for them. On 12-12, favorites go 12-1 outright, 11-2 against the spread. This includes the Thursday night game. It's the best week all year for favorites. The only loss was by the Panthers against the Falcons. So another unbelievable week for favorites. Really the first unbelievable week for favorites this year. It's just the second time all year they've had a winning record. And this week, by the way, big favorites, of at least 3.5 points, 9-0 against the spread this week. And over the last 2 weeks, they are now 17-2 against the spread. So all week on this show, all season on the show, we talk about how well underdogs have done. Well, we're starting to get a little bit more regression back to the mean. So it's going to be interesting to see how that trend continues the rest of the year.
And it was the higher profile teams like the Cowboys, the Bucks, the Chiefs cover big numbers. The Packers on Sunday night, what an incredible turnaround from a point spread perspective, outscoring the Bears 24-3 in the second half, and only a late field goal when Nagy was down 18 to kick the field goal on 4th and 8, snuck that in inside of 18, and then obviously the line being 11.5, some people were rejoicing. Nagy punted 4th and inches. Early in the fourth quarter, there were a lot of questionable decisions in that game, but that was probably a big blow to the books. That Sunday night island game, popular team like the Packers, Aaron Rodgers has obviously owned them over the years, and he certainly has delivered. I believe he's now 21-7 ATS in his career against Chicago.
Yep, 21-7 ATS. They've won and covered 6 straight meetings, 23-5 straight up. And not only did the favorite cover that game, but that game flew over the total. It actually went over in the first half. It's the first game in the last 2 years that went over the total in the first half of the game. In fact, the second quarter had 45 points. The over-under was 43. So the second quarter is all you needed in that game, or all you needed was Green Bay because they had 45 points in that game. But another big favorite caps the night for the public this week.
Combined 75 points, the second largest combined total in this rivalry's history. We'll touch on this. I guess Aaron Rodgers is going to make a case for the MVP. 4 touchdowns, no picks, 341 through the air, 29 of 37. So certainly an efficient game in that regard. It was the defense and the special teams that really struggled and dug themselves a hole against Chicago, and how the Bears were able to get a halftime lead, but just too much pack, and then the defense did step up in the second half for sure. But that was a big nail in the coffin in that game. But let's go to earlier in the day. A lot of wild ones. I want to start with the Cowboys because they were up comfortably. Dak throws a pick 6. Then it starts to get interesting because this line was 4.5 throughout most of the week. Closed, what, 6.5?
Correct.
So it got really interesting with a conversion at the end.
Yeah, move from 4.5 to 6.5 on Sunday morning. Game lands on 7, but the Washington missed an extra point that would have given Dallas, or would have given Washington the cover in that game. By the way, the total in that game landed at 48, so that extra point also would have pushed against the final total. So a lot of implications in that final extra point that didn't go down. But the Cowboys improved to 10-3 ATS in the season, 8-0 ATS in conference games. So big win for the Cowboys in that one.
Yeah, kind of what we expect with the Cowboys, right? Their offense had struggled in the games with just, you know, when Cooper and Lamb were out, like the cluster injuries. That certainly hurt them against the Raiders on Thanksgiving. And then they kind of got their regained their mojo, but just kind of, you know, you got to prevent victory sometimes on offense, and that's what happened with Dak and company. They played the clock more than field position, and that would have been fine if not for the pick 6. So Heinicke was looking for the backdoor cover, even the win, maybe with Ron Rivera and company. So that was the first of 2 meetings remaining for the Cowboys in Washington. So Dallas really basically won the NFC East, I'm going to say, tonight. They already had a 2-game lead, but getting that win was certainly significant. Keeping with popular teams, the Chiefs have now won. Are we at 6 straight now and 4 straight covers?
The Chiefs, we are at there are four straight covers and starting 2-7 ATS, six straight outright wins. There's a lot of Chiefs trends that are pretty fun. Like, they've been so bad against the spread for a long time, but they're finally starting to turn around, led by that defense, which has been unbelievable lately, allowing less than 10 points or fewer in four of their last five games. Who would have thought it with this Chiefs team?
And during this six-game win streak, they haven't allowed more than 17 to anyone. It was the Giants that got 17 in that close Monday night win at home, but this one was not close. 48-9. Raiders obviously won at Arrowhead a year ago. Things have certainly changed. The Chiefs came in with that mindset, to your point, leaning on that defense. Mahomes, he's been good against the Raiders this year. Remember, he had the 5-touchdown performance in Vegas a couple weeks ago. This game was just 2 touchdowns, 258. So I don't think he's going to be in the MVP discussion. I think he's kind of playing himself out of it, given Brady, who we'll get to in a little bit, and Rodgers are back into it. But you never know. There's still a handful of games left for them. So the Chiefs, any notes on this game other than the ones we've already mentioned?
89 points in two games against the Raiders for the Chiefs this season. That's pretty darn good right there. A couple things with that game too. Chiefs, it's their third straight home cover after they had failed to cover their last 9 home games. It's their second straight cover as a favorite of at least 7 points. They had failed to cover their previous 9 games in that spot. And spinning it forward, the Chiefs are now -230 to win the AFC West, where the Chargers are +200. Those two teams will play on Thursday. LA already upset Kansas City earlier this season, so that'll be one of the better Thursday night games this season coming up.
All right, so looking forward to that. We'll keep it moving here with the interesting covers and certainly effective. Let's go to the Bucs game. That was the afternoon slot. Bucs were dominating. Bills chip away, chip away, chip away, force overtimes. Could have scored a go-ahead touchdown the final half minute around the 5-yard line or so. Had to settle for a field goal that did force OT. Bills win the coin flip. Punt. Bucs come down and then get a walk-off touchdown when they only needed 3. And it was, I believe, the first catch of the game for Perryman, Brent Perryman. So wild scene. I'm sorry, say that again?
Rashad Perryman, Brent Perryman's kid.
Yeah, okay. Rashad Perryman, I apologize. Old habits die hard. So that was his only catch, a 58-yard walk-off touchdown. And that's a huge cover for the house. Again, Bucks were 3.5. They were 3 during the week, but 3.5. It would have been a lucky cover for the Bills for sure when they were getting blown out. But still, at that juncture, you're thinking field goal. Brady's going to move him into field goal range. Maybe even a tie, and you get the +3.5. Instead, it's a Bucs win and cover. And they're inching towards the one seed. Obviously, you've got Arizona Monday night against the Rams. That's certainly in the mix as well.
Yeah, the bat line hovered between 3 and 3.5 all week. Like you said, it actually closed at 3 at Caesars. So that's what we're going with. So that overtime touchdown, didn't matter what spread you got on Tampa Bay. They covered, and it's their fifth straight cover as a home favorite. And something that I found interesting about this game is Tom Brady helping the Patriots win the AFC East. Patriots move to -400 to win the AFC East after that game. The Bills now 3-1. Bills fell to 15-1 to win the Super Bowl this year. That's the longest price you could have gotten them on them at any point, dating back to when the odds were first released back in February. And we talked about how Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears. Well, Tom Brady continues to own the Bills. 33-3 straight up, 22-12-2 against the spread in his career against Buffalo. So another big win for Brady. And yeah, Rashad Perryman, you mentioned him. He got cut by the Lions. He got cut by the Bears. And now he's scoring game-winning touchdowns in overtime from Tom Brady. Heck of a life for Rashad Perryman.
Fitting, right? So that was certainly – so these are some of the big handle games, right? Bills Bucks was – now, that had some Bills money too. It wasn't all lopsided in favor of the home team there by the public. There was definitely two-way action on that game, but just like the big numbers got there.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Broncos against the Lions. 38-10. Maybe a flat spot like we talked about on this very podcast a week ago. Detroit feeling themselves, but they also had some COVID issues, some roster issues there. But the Broncos needed the win, took care of business and altitude. Anything stand out there? I know we know like Bridgewater is a dog, but double-digit favorite, he covers.
Well, he had never been this big a favorite in his career. That line closed 12.5. It's the most he's ever been favored by. Teddy now 42-20 against the spread in his career. Like you said, we like him more as a dog. We like him more as a road dog, but, you know, gets the job done here. This line steamed up all week. It was as low as 8 on Monday, closed 12.5. It's also the first time this season that the over hits when the Broncos cover. Typically, when Denver wins, the game goes under the total. And the other thing, too, is when Denver's a big favorite under Vic Fangio, they seem to take care of business. Now, 4-0 against the spread when laying at least 6 points under Fangio.
Keep it moving. Saints, another popular play. How about that? You've lost 5 straight games, and you're laying about 5.5 or 6 on the road. But such is life when you're the Jets. You touched on it on this podcast a week ago. That defense is terrible. Dead last in defensive efficiency, dead last in yards per play allowed, yards per game allowed, and points per game allowed. And that defensive efficiency ranking, they're like 5 points clear of Jacksonville, who's at 31. So distinctly the worst in the NFL. And the Saints took a while to get going. Big second half, late touchdown by Taysom Hill. Cashes yours truly's best bet on Daily Wager, which is over 23.5. So I was sitting at 23, but a nice winner there for the best bet. But really, the Jets are inept. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, you mentioned the defense, and the defense actually played pretty well earlier in the year. So the fact that they're that much worse than everybody else just shows how badly they've been playing recently. I was also on the Saints team total in that one. I wanted to be on the game total. I put that out on the column on ESPN.com. But then as soon as I wrote that column, I saw Elijah Moore got placed on IR like right after that because he was trending toward playing. And then all of a sudden he's out. He's basically the only playmaker the Jets have on offense, with Michael Carter also out and Corey Davis also out. But really the story of this game is down the stretch, we almost had one of the worst bad beats of the year with the over in this game. You mentioned the Saints team total. Well, I don't know if you watched the end of this game. I don't blame you if you didn't, but no. Taysom Hill ran for a 44-yard touchdown with 1:07 left as the Saints
that
were trying
I saw.
To wrap the
That
clock.
I saw.
Did you see the Jets ending drive that ended at the 1-yard line with Zach Wilson
getting
tackled?
No, I got my team total and flipped.
Zach Wilson scrambled, was tackled about, you know, a half a yard short of the end zone. And if he had scored there, the game would have gone over the closing total of 42. But instead, it stays under with 39 total points in that one.
Yeah, 2 touchdowns in the final minute would not have been good. I had a horrendous beat, one of my all-time. I had a second half under in the Niners-Bengals game. As we shift to that one, was made the game line 47. I mean, you're sitting 20-13 with like 5 minutes to go or whatever it was. Somehow I lose 40 under 47 in overtime. But the Niners had the lead. They were up 2 touchdowns. Bengals did everything they can and come back and force OT. Incredible conversions by Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, who I've been saying has value at Offensive Rookie of the Year. This is not a done deal with Mac Jones. The narrative is Belichick for New England's success. Jones has been fine, but look what Ja'Marr Chase is doing. He's top 5 in a bunch of categories in the league, not amongst rookies. He's been outstanding. Yes, some drops here and there, but if he continues to play like he did on this Sunday, I think last week he was like plus 350. I think there's value there for Ja'Marr Chase. But ultimately, after the Bengals get a field goal in the opening possession, Niners walk it off with a touchdown. So 9 points in overtime for me to lose by 2 on my under. Not that that's the storyline, but the Niners get the big win and the cover because they became road favorites throughout the week with the Joe Burrow uncertainty. So an interesting sort of swing of money line in that game, and it lands on the total or maybe close to it, depending on what the closing line was.
Yeah, we actually had that line closing at 49, so it pushed on the final total there. We mentioned earlier the overs have gone 9-3-1 to the over this week. You know, that one, depending on when you got the line, that one could have gone over. I touched on the Jets-Saints game. That was one of the games that went under. That was a yard away from going over. And the Cowboys-Washington game was an extra point away from pushing. So it could have been an even better week for the overs this week. But, so it's just 49. The Bengals were as long as 12-1 on the live line when they're down 14 in the fourth quarter. The Bills were 25-1. So in the 4 o'clock window, we were looking at 2 games where we could have had some wild comebacks in the fourth quarter. Neither one ended up coming true. But to touch on Ja'Marr Chase, though, he's now the 5th player since the 1970 merger with 1,000 receiving yards and 10 receiving touchdowns in his rookie year. Odell Beckham and Mike Evans both did it in 2014. Beckham won Rookie of the Year that year. Randy Moss did it in 1998. He won Rookie of the Year that year. So there is a bit of a precedent for guys like that, though. Justin Jefferson had arguably the best rookie year ever by a wide receiver last year, and he didn't win it. So it's going to be a bit of an uphill climb for Chase. But when Mac Jones only throws 3 passes on Monday and they still win without him, you know, yeah, that's got to be a knock on Jones's Rookie of the Year case. You would think that they can win without him like that.
Yeah, but some people were saying that wasn't necessarily a strike. I don't know. But I just think Ja'Marr Chase is certainly live in this one, in this discussion. Let's go to Seahawks-Texans. That got some money. That was my best bet on the podcast, Daily Wager Extra, during the week. and throughout the show, and I gave it out on SportsCenter. Just love the situation. Davis Mills stinks, and he continues to stink. Now, Seahawks pulled away in the second half. Definitely a big fourth quarter. But Russell Wilson looks like he's healthy finally. Played a couple good games back-to-back. Seahawks win 33-13, easily covering the number that certainly steamed up. Seahawks were nearly double-digit road favorites by kickoff.
Yeah, we had that line closing 9.5. It's so rare for a team with a record as with Seattle. They were 4-8 entering the game, now 5-8. They're the first team in December or January with a winning percentage that low to be favored by over a touchdown in the Super Bowl era. So an unprecedented line there with Seattle. And I got to say, I didn't really watch much of the game. I don't have a whole lot of the notes in this game. But one thing with the total, it's the second straight time the Seahawks have gone over the total. They had been an under machine earlier in the year at 9-1-1. And the Seahawks play at the Rams next week. So the 5-8 Seahawks, it's basically a do or die game next week for them in L.A.
Yeah, and coincidentally, the injury occurred when the Rams were playing at Seattle, and Russell Wilson hurt it. I believe it was a Thursday night game that the Rams ultimately won in Seattle. So there was a bad beat, a significant one, at the Dog Pound. Browns were laying 2.5 or 3, depending on the number you got throughout the week, and they were in control of this game as Lamar Jackson left the game in the first quarter, I believe, definitely first half. Brett Hundley, the Utah quarterback, replaced him, and then it was a giant backdoor as the Browns did not even score in the second half after leading 24-6. And Ravens could have kicked a field goal, instead went for it, and just a sequence of events that really burned anyone laying the 2.5 with Cleveland.
Yeah, we had that line closing at 3. They're 24-3 deficit in the second half, 24-9 deficit in the fourth quarter. I did like how Harbaugh went for 2 the first time they scored a touchdown down 15. He gave a great answer after the game talking about why he did it, basically saying you want as much information ahead of time so that way, you know, hey, if we don't get the 2, we can plan it out like, all right, we need to score 2 more times to actually win this game. And actually, as it turned out, it ended up being very important because they scored the touchdown with 1:17 left to Mark Andrews to cut it to 2. And then they got the onside kick after that. Had they waited to the 2-point conversion after the second touchdown, not gotten it, they might not have saved time for them. So they gave themselves a chance to win. Obviously, it didn't happen, but it did happen for the betters of the window with one of the worst backdoor covers of the year or one of the best ones, depending on what side you're on.
Yeah, just a wild ending, given Lamar Jackson had got hurt and sneaks over the total too, lands 46 on an over-under 44. I've always defended that. I also think coaches get deference on that because so much of it is nuance. You may love a play that you worked and set up the fake of it on that drive, or your star quarterback needs a break, so maybe you kick it then. So I think those situations, a lot of it is nuanced and based on like player situational. And so I give coaches a lot of deference in that situation in terms of going for 2. But what Harbaugh said, I certainly understand. And all things being equal, if it's going to be the same outcome, go run the play now so you know if you make it or not. Therefore, it gives you information for later in the game. Everyone always assumes the 2-point conversion when they say, oh, it's a 2-score game, down 15, things like that. It's like, you don't know that.
So I think
we need to reassess that. What's that?
I like to call it a 2.5 score game or a 1.5 score
right,
game.
Right, yeah. 2.1 or something, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so a couple other games. Titans, Jaguars, kind of as expected. Titans all over the Jags. A lot of turmoil and reports surfacing surrounding Urban Meyer. What else is new this year? It's been a total roller coaster. Titans off the bye, kind of buttoned up performance, needed a win. Obviously, things aren't the same without Derrick Henry, but they got back on track, at least at home against the Jaguars. Had to take care of business, and they did. That's all they could worry about, taking care of business, and they did. They covered the, 8.5? A lot of teasers on that, too.
Yeah, a lot of the good teaser bets came through this week, too. We talked about the Bengals plus 1.5, moving to 7.5. The Ravens were plus 2.5 a lot of the week. That was a common thing to tease up. The Falcons, which we'll get into a little bit, teasing them up. I mean, they would have covered anyway. But a lot of the common teaser lines came through this week as well. But Tennessee's now 4-0 against the spread after a bye under Mike Vrabel. But the Jaguars, I mean, 8 straight unders for them. That offense is completely inept. The under is now 11-2 in Jaguars games this year. They're now 4-9 against the spread. And next week, you could take them as a favorite since they're playing the Texans. So
wow.
Jaguars laying 3 in that one right now. Remember, Houston won that game in week 1. So I don't know. That's taking the Jaguars. I don't know what's less appealing, taking the Jaguars as a favorite or taking Houston getting only 3 points. But the other thing, too, with that game is the Titans play in Pittsburgh next week. Titans are laying 2.5 in that one. I'm leaning pretty heavily toward Pittsburgh in that one. I would love the three, but I don't trust this Titans team. I wasn't impressed with them today. I'm not impressed with that offense. The defense, obviously, they shut Jacksonville out, but I think that has more to do with Jacksonville just being completely inept offensively. I'm not sold on this Titans team at all come playoff time. So I think I'm going to fade them next week in Pittsburgh.
Couple other games to just finish off this Sunday. Panthers-Falcons, I watched basically nothing of this game because that was my intention, and I'm glad I didn't. Although it had 50 combined points, I will say some interesting plays. You got a pick six in there, but I wanted no part of this awful, awful game. And do we have anything from a points perspective? That was the one upset, right? That was the one upset?
That was the only upset. So if you did a money line parlay and every favorite, that would have been the one game that Cam Newton continues to struggle as a favorite. 10-19 against the spread as a favorite over the last 5 years. Losing record outright, 14-15 outright. And with the Panthers, each of the last eight times he has started with Carolina as a favorite, he's lost the game outright, including all three times this year. They tried benching Cam Newton at the end of the first half for PJ Walker. Walker probably comes in and throws an interception. So the Carolina is just a mess, the quarterback situation right now. And one other trend that I've been liking too is home favorites have under a field goal this year. So 1 to 2.5 points. Those lines often look juicy. You think, hey, you know, I get the home team under a field goal. They're 6-14 outright and ATS this season. So those home favorites, those really small home favorites, they might look appealing, but they have not been good this year. And we'll have that same situation on Monday night. So we'll see how that trend goes tomorrow.
And finally, the Chargers do cover. Big number as well. Usually not what the Chargers do, but when the Giants are involved, anything is on the table. And it was Mike Glennon. This game got crazy at the end, so second half unders got burned, but the Chargers win 37-21. And Joe Judge's days have got to be numbered, right?
And I agree. I mean, he's getting a lot of heat in the New York media recently, and for good reason. He used to be really good as a road underdog. He started his career 8-1 against the spread as a road dog, but they're now 1-4 ATS in their last five games in that spot. Mike Glennon, I believe, is 1-14 outright in his last 15 starts. Giants are just a mess right now. And like I mentioned earlier, Chargers Chiefs on Thursday night. So that'll be a fun game between those two teams.
It certainly will. Tomorrow night, Arizona, 2.5-point home favorite to the Rams. I just question this Rams team in terms of what the odds makers view it, right? I think the power rating is just out of whack. This team was favored at Lambeau a couple weeks ago. So as much as you want to say, oh, the house knows something, why isn't it 3? It's 2.5. I just wonder if this is one of those teams that's just going to be poorly rated the entire year in terms of accuracy. Like we saw that with Wisconsin majority of the season this past college football year. They were favored over a touchdown against Notre Dame on a neutral field. Now, Badgers end up playing well at the end of the year, but I just wonder if this is too good to be true, so to speak, because the public is certainly on the Birds.
Well, depending on how many points you give for home field advantage, I mean, maybe it's 2.5. Like, that basically says that these two teams are equal. And based on everything we've seen from these two teams, the Cardinals are the better team. I don't know if that's actually true. We'll find out how that is in the playoffs. Obviously, the Rams have had a lot of moving parts during the season, losing Robert Woods, adding Odell Beckham, adding Von Miller. But I would lean with Arizona in this game, too. I haven't made a bet. I don't think I'm going to make a bet on this one. Arizona's 9-3 against the spread this year, 4-0 ATS in the division. Sean McVay started his career 8-0 against the spread against the Cardinals, but back in week 4, the Cardinals took care of business and dominated the Rams in that game. So that trend doesn't have as much teeth as it used to anymore. So it's going to be a real fun game, though. A lot of NFC West implications in that one, though. Arizona's minus 1,200 to win that division. So Arizona wins, it'll basically be locked up.
I'm very interested to see how it all plays out. That's what I'm interested to, because I'm curious whether this 2.5 was just a sucker bet for all the public because, oh, the Rams bounce back. Where's just the Rams power rating so off? I like the Cardinals, don't love it, but I like it a little bit. Okay, that's going to do it. Really good recap, McKenzie. Awesome stats. Did I miss anything?
I think the one thing that we didn't really touch on is the MVP race. We mentioned a couple guys, but Caesars released their new MVP odds after tonight's games. Tom Brady, -175 favorite. It's the first time all year we've had an odds on favorite in the MVP race. Aaron Rodgers, 7-1. Kyler Murray, Mahomes, 9-1. Then Justin Herbert, 16-1. Josh Allen all the way down to 20-1 as his MVP odds continue to plummet. But it looks, I mean, I've said for a couple weeks in the show, this looks like Brady's award to lose. He's number one in all the statistical categories among quarterbacks. He's Tom Brady. You want the narrative that you want to give it to an MVP that old. You want to give it to Tom Brady. He's only won a couple MVPs in his career. I think Brady's clearly the favorite for this award. I think minus 175 is fair. I'm on record saying that I don't think Aaron Rodgers has much of a chance to win, even if the Packers get the one seed. I just don't think the media is going to want to vote for Rodgers to win that award. And then Kyler Murray, 9-1, he's missed a couple games. And Patrick Mahomes, 9-1, that's a little bit intriguing. But if Tom Brady's putting up better numbers than Mahomes on a better team, I don't know what Mahomes' path to win that is. So I think that's a pretty fair odds for Tom Brady and MVP at minus 175.
And Mahomes' numbers haven't been that remarkable, at least certainly by his high standards.
Exactly.
I mean, he's great. Don't get me wrong. He's Patrick Mahomes, but it's just not the same Patrick Mahomes that won the MVP in terms of statistics. So it's not like he's just putting up great numbers and a slightly worse team or something like that. The defense, like we talked about earlier in the pod, has certainly been carrying that team. At least that's the narrative. Mahomes has been solid, of course, against the Raiders. He was really good. So that's going to do it for this edition of Daily Wager Extra. Appreciate everyone tuning in. And of course, we have the 10-minute version Monday through Friday continuing along, and we'll be back on linear television Tuesday, 6 Eastern on ESPN2. We hope you join us then.